On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. On Friday, Michelle Obama, the first African-American First Lady, addressed graduates at Bowie State University, Maryland's oldest historically black institution of higher learning. Alyssa Richardson is a journalist and award-winning professor at Bowie State. In this reflection on HBIs that she wrote for The Lines Between Us, our project on regional inequality, she describes how she was shaped by an interaction with a student at a traditionally white institution.
A tiny smirk played upon her lips as she tipped her glass of red wine into my lap. Everyone at the table fell silent. For a split second, I imagined my alter ego stepping outside of my body to slap her. But then I remembered where I was. I was sitting in a bar with classmates from my journalism master's program, and out of the 80 students admitted to the cohort, I was the only African-American woman. This was the first of many times I missed the comfort of a historically black institution. Whenever the debate flares about whether HBIs are still relevant or necessary, I consciously compare the time I spent at Xavier University, a leading HBI in culturally rich, economically poor New Orleans, to the time I spent fighting to keep my sanity as a graduate student in Chicago at Northwestern University, a wealthy, predominantly white institution. The sub-zero Midwestern winters were a perfect stage for icy, racial scenarios like the one I was living out in that bar one evening. We were all exhausted from a long week of reporting in the city. For weeks, I had politely declined happy hour invitations. I didn't drink, I'd just turned 21, and I spent every day as the only one in the room. So I didn't want to socialize at night in spaces where I would be the sole African-American too. Especially not at night near Northwestern, where pictures of swastikas and nooses had recently begun popping up on campus dorm room doors. But on this night, the only other African-American student in the program had planned to go too. He was about 7 years older. I told him, "I'll stay as long as you do." With the pact in place, I went. Then it happened. The conversation turned to affirmative action. One young woman at the table began a diatribe, saying our school should stop diversity initiatives. I remember her ranting, "Black and brown people are going to take over everything. As a white woman, that scares me. Doesn't it scare you guys? Next thing you know, everyone's going to have to learn how to speak Spanish in school, and we'll have a black president." My white classmates laughed uncomfortably. "What's wrong with that?" I asked. For the first time, she made direct eye contact with me. She took a sip of her red wine before she spoke. Her speech slurred, she said, "When I say black people, I don't mean you. They're different." This was supposed to be a compliment. Sure, to some people I'm exceptional. I entered Xavier University at age 16 and earned a biology degree by age 20, only to defer admission to medical school to pursue a master's degree in journalism from one of our nation's finest universities. I never let my GPA dip below a 3.0. I made it through adolescence without getting pregnant. I didn't smoke marijuana or drink. I didn't swear often. I was raised by two married parents, both with advanced degrees. My classmates in Chicago had never heard of any other black person like me. And this was cultural shock for me. I grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland, which was, in its 1990s heyday, the richest black county in the United States. Nearly all of my friends had two-parent households where their folks had good government jobs or advanced degrees. It was a place where black overachievers went to raise second-generation overachievers. And I thrived. It only made sense to head to New Orleans to attend Xavier, which bred nothing but second- and third-generation doctors, lawyers, and professionals. These students were brilliant and privileged, valedictorians, SGA presidents, and football captains. These were all American black youth who had reached the highest echelons of academic excellence, vying for a chance to have a seat at the table. Alongside them, I'd never felt exceptional. It wasn't until I had a seat at a very different table in a Chicago bar that someone else told me differently. "When you say black people, you do mean me," I said. "I don't see anything wrong with diversity. I don't see anything wrong with learning another language." I never finished my argument. I saw her elbow nudge her wine glass slightly. It landed in my lap. I was wearing a crisp white cotton blouse. I watched the wine creep across the fabric. Someone gasped. My face burned white hot. I looked up to glare at her. She was smirking. I had to make a choice between displaying the angry black woman stereotype or the graceful exit. I chose the latter. I said, "Well, this is why I am not a bar person. I'm going to call it a night, and I'll give you my bill for my dry cleaners." I tried to laugh and shrug. She folded her arms and never apologized. I will never forget my classmates' faces. Some were humiliated for me, bright red from their ears to the tips of their noses. Others put their heads down as I walked away. My African-American friend, who had convinced me to attend, even froze. As I headed out of the bar and into the wintry evening, tears stung my eyes. A pretty Puerto Rican classmate came out after me, crying. "I'm so sorry, Alyssa," she said, hugging me. I told her to keep walking so our classmates would not see me crying. I had come too far. I heard the voices of my HBI professors telling me, "Never let them see you sweat." Now I knew who the them might be. When I graduated from Northwestern, I felt relieved. Until I entered the workforce. Everywhere I went, reporting on Capitol Hill, working at top newspapers and magazines, people of color and women were underrepresented. I decided to do something about it. I wanted to feed the pipeline so that hiring managers at news organizations could never say that there just wasn't enough qualified talent. I became a journalism professor at an HBI, Morgan State University, and launched its first mobile journalism laboratory there. I pushed my students to adapt to industry change, reporting with only iPods and iPads. I watched some students land jobs at CNN, The New York Times, and NPR. I partnered with nonprofits and embassies to teach women and people of color across 24 cities in Africa. This year, Apple Inc. inducted me into its Distinguished Educator Program. This will only mean more access and more opportunity for my students at Bowie State University, where I work now. Attending an undergraduate HBI didn't prepare me for the shock of racially hostile experiences at my predominantly white grad school, or the distinct absence of minority staff at the institutions I went to work for. But it did give me the education to succeed in those institutions. And it gave me the determination to work at an HBI so I could help people of color cultivate the talent that will enable them to change those institutions for the better. On Friday, I welcomed an African-American First Lady of the United States to my campus at Bowie State for commencement. 10 years ago, my classmate questioned whether we should have a black president. In 2013, as students I had trained interviewed President Barack Obama's wife, who just so happens to be a native Chicagoan, I couldn't help but feel a divine sense of poetic justice. For me, the choice to attend and now teach at an HBI is deeply personal. I stood on the backs of well-to-do first-generation HBI alumni to get where I am. I didn't become successful alone. For me, it's about giving back. It's about service. It is not about crying over spilled wine or playing victim, as critics of HBIs allege. It's about feeding a professional pipeline and lifting every voice. It's about earning a seat at the table. And for me, it's about progress, one semester at a time.
Alyssa Richardson. She was voted Journalism Educator of the Year in 2012 by the National Association of Black Journalists. At linesbetweenus.org, you can read Alyssa's essay and an essay by former Maryland Morning intern Brandon Green about his twin sister's decision to attend an HBI while he decided to turn down Morehouse College and attend the University of Maryland. On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Stick around.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning Senior Producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus. Or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.